Well, welcome back everyone, and I hope that you've been able to have a lovely break. We certainly have, and what I'd like to do now is begin with this theme of intimacy, sensuality and mystical union. And I'd like to do that by focusing on the symbolism of the kiss that first comes up in the Song of Songs. So what we've been reflecting on this morning is that place within our own heart of our essential unity in the divine, in that flow of the love of the Trinity. And so often, when people have been trying to describe what their experience of that is like, they talk about this sense of the kiss, or the inner kiss of the mystical marriage. The inner oneing, or the inner union. And it comes, of course, from that very first opening line of the Song of Songs. And I particularly love this translation of Marcia Falk, a beautiful Jewish author, where she just talks about, "Oh, for your kiss, for your love is more enticing than wine." So this kiss that's already within us, and this longing that we have, which is the divine desire within us for this kiss to come to fruition. And there's another translation here. "Kiss me and make me drunk with your kisses." That's a very sort of Sufi way of translating it. That we might be just so inebriated in this kiss of the beloved that we have within our own heart. And of course, again, Paul, I think another great mystic, where he just talks about anyone who is joined to the beloved is one in spirit. So that being one in spirit. And so what's some of the language we might put on that kiss if we can access it within our heart now? As we're just within that pointless point of pure oneness, would be shimmering silence, quivering stillness. And there would be so many more beautiful words that we might want to draw on for that. But it's that exquisite intimacy of being in one another in the divine. And so what is it then that we might discover as we go into our heart, as we share, we listen to our own heart as a spiritual companion, or we share with our spiritual companion the divine love song, the Song of Songs within us? What is this song? And this beautiful book by Blaise Armingjohn, where he speaks about this Song of Songs, that is the song of our own heart, starts with a kiss. Such indeed is the start of the symphony. So it starts with that original kiss of the divine, where we indwell, as the divine lovers kiss each other into being and kiss creation into being in that creativity, ongoing creativity. So the Shir HaShirim. And the other thing then I want to sort of say about this which I began to connect with in our earliest talk, was this sense of our sensual awareness. That what is it that our body knows, our sensuality knows about this kiss? And what is it that our heart, soul, mind knows? And how can we connect those two and bring the awareness from the inner depths of the darkness of our heart, soul, awareness out into our sensual awareness, so that our sensuality and our substance are one? Julian of Norwich would say, that's what's important. That God is in our sensuality, God is in our substantial self, or our essence, our heart self, and that in the Christ they are one, and that we might be so connected into the Christ in that we are actively involved in the oneing. So sensual awareness, heart awareness. Oops. And then this beautiful sense of the doves who come home to the dove cote, into the heart. And this reminds me of the image we had before of ourselves holding and embracing the world. Again, we're holding and embracing the world in all its beauty, in all its suffering. And we're holding and embracing the divine, the jewels of the divine lovers within us, and the intimacy of that and what all that means. This is another beautiful stained glass window that I love from Gertrude's Chapel in Helfter, where this is Mechtild and the Christ. And notice how, as they're in this oneing, that there's only one heart. It's the one heart that sees and knows and loves. And just to draw on Bernard of Clairvaux, and what I want to point out about this is, we're going to draw on both men and women, that what I'm saying, I think, is this whole sensual, mystical element of Christianity is connected, comes from both women and men. And often it's thought of as simply a woman's way of knowing. But in actual fact, Bernard's one of the great, you know, authors of the Christianity, particularly from the Cistercian tradition. And he writes so exquisitely about this. And so this love song, this intimacy, this mystical marriage that's at the depths of our hearts. He says, "For it's not a melody that resounds abroad, but the very music of the heart. Not a trilling on the lips, but an inward pulsing of delight. A harmony, not of voices, but of wills. It is a tune you will not hear in the streets. These notes do not sound where crowds assemble. Only the singer hears it, and the one to whom she or he sings, the lover and the beloved." And this cosmic kiss, and a beautiful creation myths, "Let there be light." So the kiss of light, that again we're part of in this infinite cosmic kiss that's continuing to evolve now. And can we be part of the incarnating? Can we enable this cosmic kiss to become more and more in our consciousness? It's beautifully, exquisitely personal, and at the same time, absolutely cosmic. So we're touching our original kiss, remembering the song. Remembering the song that we've forgotten, because our essential self and our heart wisdom has been disconnected from our discursive mind, and often from our sensuality for that matter. So we're wanting to connect all of this back together, one, bring our mind into this awareness, bring our body into this awareness, so there's a beautiful oneing and creativity of the song of our heart. So Julian says to us, "For I saw very surely that our substance is in God, and I also saw that God is in our sensuality." Such a beautiful word, sensuality. And I think within the Christian tradition, it's had such a torrid time that it's really critical now that we reclaim it as our own. and reclaim the beautiful wisdom that's just embodied within it. Diane Bergeon, when she's speaking about the Song of Songs and this beautiful sense of intimacy that we're invited to, she plays with this sense of the mouth. And she says, since the kiss of the mouth or the mouth could be regarded as a primary physical gateway to the interior of a person, passionate mouth kissing literally opens the lovers to each other. Such openness renders one dangerously vulnerable, capable of being entered into and possessed by the other. Only audacious trust can dispose one to such vulnerability. I think there's some very important things there, she said. Such openness renders us dangerously vulnerable. And we're going to come back to that tomorrow, in that it's often where we've been wounded, particularly, say, within our sexual wounds, that then if we aren't able to be within that, in that tender and beautiful and loving way, then we forever trying to find ways in which we can camouflage who we truly are, protect ourselves, keep ourselves safe, and resist being dangerously vulnerable. But in actual fact, it's, and of course we absolutely have to be safe in a safe environment to be able to do this. And this is very much the role, I think, of the spiritual companion, to create a safety where someone can be dangerously vulnerable. And we can only be dangerously vulnerable if we're one who, with somebody who knows how to be dangerously vulnerable and who knows the deep wounding and the deep heartache of his or her own heart. So this invitation to be vulnerable, like our vulnerable God, to be able to enter the ground, to be possessed by one another, and to be able to come to that audacious trust, to trust what the beloved is doing in this now. So of course, Diane, he is speaking symbolically again, but what the language hopefully doing is starting to touch, what is that deep intimacy of that inner kiss inside my heart, inside my, the ground of my being? What is that like? How do I know when I'm in it? How do I settle within it, abide within it, become stable, and to be able to live from that intimacy, to become stable within it? William of St. Terry, another Cistercian, has a beautiful piece in his writings of the Golden Epistle where he speaks about the kiss of the Trinity. And William says, the Holy Spirit is the love of the Father and the Son, their unity, sweetness, good kiss. We might say the Holy Spirit is the love of the Mother and of the Son. Or we might say the love of the Source and the Son, of the Son, or the infinite womb of all being, or whatever language you might want to use. What we're wanting to be connected to in this point of time is the essential unity, the sweetness, the good, the kiss. Embrace whatever else they have in common in the supreme unity of truth and the truth of unity. The soul in its happiness finds itself standing midway in the embrace and the kiss of the Father and the Son, or Mother and Son, in a manner which exceeds description and thought. The person of God is found worthy to become not God, but what God is. That is to say, we become from grace what God is by nature. So we enter into that deep inner kiss. William there has probably got a little bit more distinction between us and God, in essence, than some of the later writers have, say, particularly Julian or the Cloud. But it's interesting just to see where he's heading with that. The other person I wanted to introduce you to was Joseph Chikung Kong. He's a lovely, again, a Cistercian, a lovely Cistercian monk, Vietnamese. And he wrote, this is quite going back a few years now, a book called The Contemplative Experience, Erotic Love and Spiritual Union. She really liked the title. And when I was at university, we used to reflect on this quite a bit. he has this beautiful piece where he takes the Song of Songs and he says, in a way, the Song of Songs really describes the inner journey. And he has these five movements where he talks about, first of all, this movement of I am the beloved. So we become, have a sense, you know, I am the beloved. The beloved's desire is for me. And then there's a movement of, and the beloved is mine, of sort of an intimacy of belonging, of becoming more and more one within each other. And then he has this movement of, come, my beloved, let us go to the fields. And so we start to realize that as we go deeper and deeper into the fields of our heart, there's the divine image within us. And at first we're sort of the observer of the divine image, and then we realize that we're actually within the divine and we're awakening within the divine. And then his fourth movement he talks about, and see whether the grape blooms have opened. So we start to inner penetrate each other. And there I will give you my love. And he talks about the unity attained. And if I think about my own journey, which has been very much a journey of with the beloved, that, you know, I can reflect back to many, many years ago where I always had an image where, and we'll come back to this, of going into my inner heart, into the wine cellar, which is a beautiful classic image, again, from the Song of Songs that people like Claire of Assisi and certainly John of the Cross draw on. So in my own prayer, for many years, my beloved and I would meet in the wine cellar. And we would be with each other and enjoy each other's company, if you like. And then over the years, there's a sense of the beloved is mine. So that what used to be a separate encounter, start to realize that there's only one beloved. That when I enter into the wine cellar of my heart, I enter into the beloved. And so I am the beloved. We're saying to each other, we are in each other. And then there's this movement of really starting to identify with the eternal or endlessness of that being in each other. That is actually essentially who we are. And I can remember an important time, this would have been in my 40s, maybe early 40s, something like that, where I really came to realize in the womb before the dawn I begot you, that this eternal being within this kiss of the Trinity, of the divine lovers, that this is where I was, this is what my essential nature was, in the beloved, so that when I go into my inner wine cellar, there's a sense of being in the beloved. And then that sense of mutual inner penetration, I think, is an eternal luminosity that starts to emerge. Sometimes it has a very dark sense about it, and other times it has luminous darkness or even quite a luminosity. And that this is the eternal oneing that we dwell within. And that unity is who we are, so that it's not something we're coming in and out of. Yes, we ground in it particularly in our silent meditative prayer time, contemplatio, but we start to become that. Now, that's where Joseph Chikung Kong finishes. But what I love too is what Beatrice Bruto says is, actually, that's where we begin. That's not the end of the mystical journey. It's actually the beginning. And so what we discover more and more as we're in each other in the oneing is that we're all in the same oneing as a communion of lovers, of a communion of heart, earth, being. That heart awareness that Robert Sedello was talking about, that this is infinitely connected to land, it's infinitely connected to cosmos, to an endlessness probably of you know, planetary systems and universes, and that this capacity that we have for intimacy is actually endless. And this is what the divine is doing within us. And that we can learn how to awaken within that, within a communion of hearts in hearts. So the movement, wherever we might be, and what's really important in this is that we're not then, please don't go and say, oh, that's Kerry's prayer and I'll never be able to do that. That's really unhelpful. I'm just offering that as a model. For other people, that can be there can be much stronger sense of darkness, which we'll come back to tomorrow. So you might say, I want to do away with cataphatic, apophatic language, which is the that makes a split between what we might say more imagery, sensual awareness, and dark, apophatic. But they're actually one and the same. And what's really important is, though, that we do have some models to encourage us, but nothing's held up as the... We're all absolutely beautifully unique. And wherever we are on our journey, that's where the kiss is now. That's where the kiss is now. So I think that's really important. But I just find Joseph's work really helpful. So some of the things I want to sort of bring into this is this sense of the great romance, particularly, you know, John of the Cross, that what the divine became human to marry us, to draw us into this great romance of absolute oneness in God. And that critical to that is living in sacred sensuousness. If we don't integrate our sensuality and our sexuality, then we're always going to be in this sort of drawing apart, this sort of scattered. And I like the Cloud of Unknowing's word of being scattered. So this, we must bring in our sensuality. And we want to start to reflect on this sense of embodied loving, of passion and holy eros. That the divine lovers are holy eros. And that what's critical to this is then that we come into what we might call a psychosexual harmony. And that part of the problem that we're really dealing with now, with all of the sexual wounding that's been happening within the Christian tradition, is that this psychosexual harmony has been very disturbed. And so claiming who we are as men and women, and whatever, wherever we might be in terms of intimacy in our own relationality with men and women, women and women, men and men, or whatever patterns and varieties of that might take place, that our own experience of sexual intimacy and psychosexual intimacy affects profoundly our capacity to be able to move into mystical union. And that often you find that in order to enter into mystical union, if we've had a lot of sexual wounding, that the beloved needs to touch us in that. Right in the point of our deepest wound in that is where the beloved's kiss is. It's where the beloved's drawing us into deep, deep intimacy. So this movement of ecstasy, the in withinness, so that we might be able to go into our own wound, whatever that might be, in such a way that we touch that pure intimacy of loving love, and that by its very nature then pours out in the ecstasy of love. It's got to pour out into creation. That's the movement of it. And so lots of different language that's used, and again some more of this will come up as we go on, like surrender, like we're yielding into this movement, into this love. We're being inebriated in love, infused in love, drawn into love. Sometimes the language of annihilation is used, and again this is all pointing towards tomorrow, and I want to reclaim that word for us, because it is in that place of just the loveliest emptiness that we meet this pure, pure oneness. And the annihilation language is really saying that myself is so given over in the divine love, and the divine love is so given over into my essential self, into my essence, into my whole embodied being, that we are one. And so this language of desire, of will, and I was talking earlier this morning about the will, this flow of love, and the unity of spirit that we're really connecting into. And that all that has quite a sensual dimension, and at the same time, a sensuality beyond sensuality, if you like. Now, there's two people in particular now I'd like to draw on, having pointed, or three really. John of the Cross will come up shortly, and we've mentioned already the Cistercians, and the Cistercian males, we could have a look at those in quite some detail. But the two that I really want, I think, do this really beautifully, is Hedwig. One of them's Hedwig, and the other one is MacTilt. And I'd like to just point now to this movement in Hedwig, and what we're inviting each other into is giving each other permission to feel this, to be this, to fall in love in a way like beyond what we've ever imagined. This exquisite, extravagant love that has loved us into being, beyond all, you know, even language of eternity is a bit too concrete. This is Hedwig from one of her visions. She's totally in love with her beloved, and she's at Eucharist. And she writes, "My heart and my veins and all my limbs trembled and quivered with eager desire, as often occurred with me. Such madness and fear beset my mind that it seemed to me I did not content my beloved, and that my beloved did not fulfill my desire." Now, within Hedwig, she goes to, I would say, almost extreme with the agony of this desire that's not being fulfilled. She's not contenting her beloved, and her beloved's not fulfilling her, that this longing is so intense. As she stays with all of those feelings that she feels in both sensually, physically, and spiritually, emotionally, and stays with it, and that would be again the role of the spiritual companion to enable us to stay with that desire. She goes on and she says, "I desired to have full fruition of my beloved." So she wants nothing less than mystical union here. "Full fruition of my beloved, and to understand and to taste him to the full." And notice the language of the spiritual sense, to taste. We're like, when we taste something, we digest it, we become it. "I desire that his humanity should to the fullest extent be one in fruition with my humanity." So she's speaking here really about Jesus, is the truth of it. And for some, depending on what your own sexual preference might be, this might be very, very important to actually be the feminine divine. So we could, so we need to be able to say, and if we can't, then that might be the area where we need to look at the kiss. So in a way, especially if we're spiritual companions, we need to be comfortable whether this is actually male or female, or male and male, female and female, or a bit of both. So I desire to have full fruition of my beloved and to understand and taste him to the full, or to taste the beloved to the full. I desire that the humanity of the beloved should to the fullest extent be one in fruition with my humanity. And that mine should hold its stand and be strong enough to enter into perfection until I content my beloved, who is perfection itself, by purity and unity, and in all things to content my beloved fully in every virtue. To that end, I wished that the beloved might content me interiorly with the Godhead in one spirit, and that for me, the beloved should be all the beloved is, without holding anything from me. To grow up in order to be God with God. Now show me your power to unite your oneness in the manner of union with full possession. Now that's an amazing passage, isn't it? And as you can imagine, there's been a little bit written about this. And there's a lovely book that Paul Monmeyer writes about Hadewijk. He's a great Belgian scholar. Hadewijk, by the way, is this is Middle Dutch, and her dates are 1220 to 1260. In Belgium, she is one of the greatest poets, writers in Middle Dutch. Fabulous work, just fabulous writings. And in Paul Montmire's book, he says, he quotes someone of whose name has escaped me, and probably better that we don't draw on his name, who says, well, this is definitely all metaphorical. This couldn't possibly, she's just speaking in great metaphor. And Paul Montmire says, why would you say that? He's saying, Hadewijk's describing what she's experiencing. And why do we always have to spiritualize it? And I think that that's really wise. And notice here too, so this contentment and being in one another, but also in content me interiorly with the Godhead. Now, I think that's critical. That this is the divine transcendence within us, and it's that intimacy of the inner marriage or the kiss or mystical union, whatever you want to try and language you put on it, of absolute lovemaking within the Godhead. Hadewijk's not happy with anything but less than the Godhead, and I think that's really important. So, without withholding anything from me. To grow up in order to be God with God. So in other words, we need to grow up. And what we're to be is to be this mature person who is the beloved of the beloved, that the beloved absolutely desires and needs to be in order to be the fullness of the beloved. That we're essential ourselves as humankind and as creation to that unity. So I find that an exquisitely beautiful passage. And again, all of these you can spend some time on. You could spend weeks on that, really. So Hadewijk's taking us into this abyss of divine wisdom. And she says, where the abyss of divine wisdom is, there God will teach you what God is, and with what wondrous sweetness the beloved one and the beloved dwell in each other, and how they penetrate each other in such a way that neither of the two distinguish themselves from the other. They penetrate each other in such a way that neither of the two distinguishes themselves from the other. Now, what I think is important about this too is that for some people, this is a celibate journey where it's the lover and the beloved, and they don't have this sort of inner intimacy with another human being. But for many of us, we do. And what I want to suggest is that the fact that we do is actually helpful, because you can't maintain a deep intimate relationship with someone for too long without learning how to give yourself beyond all the egoic controls and beyond. There's something that we learn, I think, in that sort of genuineness of that love of one another, that also then prepares us to be able to be in this ground of love. At the same time, that same intimacy is exquisitely and beautifully for some people within celibacy. But I think where we've seen only too sadly within the Christian tradition is where that split, that where people have got that wrong, and it's within that gap that a lot of the pain that we're suffering at the moment happens, which I'll come back to tomorrow. So we want to be in that beautiful inner heart room where God will teach us what God is. This is the spirit in us with sighs too deep for words. This, the touchings of the presence of grace that absolutely melts us into pure intimacy. That's what we're talking about. And so Hedwig goes on and she says, they abide in one another in fruition. And notice again the lovely sensual language. Mouth in mouth, heart in heart, body in body, and soul in soul. While one sweet divine nature flows through them both. And they are both one thing through each other. One sweet divine nature flows through them both, and they're both one thing through each other. To live for no one else but the beloved in love alone, to live in the spouse as the loved one in the beloved, with the same way of acting with one spirit and with one heart and in one another, to taste the unheard of sweetness Christ merits for us by Christ's sufferings. Oh yes, to feel heart in heart with one single heart and one single sweet love, and continually have fruition in one full-grown love. And lastly, that one must know certainly without any doubt that one is wholly in the unity of love. And I think that's true. There's something of when we're in that exquisite intimacy that's beyond. There's a certainty there. Like we just know that this whole existence is all about love. And it's all about intimacy. And if we're in that point of pure intimacy, all there is oneing. All there is being in one another. So I think Hedwig gives us some beautiful imagery there for us to really engage with and spend some time with. I think very, very, very beautiful. Gosh, I can't believe the time. Just go into this and it just floats, doesn't it? She melted in contemplation. She gave the beloved all. And the gift robbed her of, and the gift robbed her of everything she had within, in both heart and mind. Nothing remained. Everything was engulfed in love. When the loved one receives from her beloved the kisses that truly pertain to love, when the beloved takes possession of the loved soul in every way, love drinks in these kisses and tastes them to the end. As soon as love thus touches the soul, she eats its flesh and drinks its blood. Love that thus dissolves the loved soul sweetly leads them both to the invisible kiss, that same kiss which fully unites the three persons in one soul being. It's so beautiful, isn't it? This that comes from her love has seven names. Love drinks in these kisses and tastes them to the end. As soon as love touches the soul, she eats its flesh and drinks its blood. Love that thus dissolves the loved soul sweetly leads them both to the indivisible kiss, that same kiss which fully unites the three persons. So that's really what I've been trying to point us into, this ground, so that we might experience this ourselves. So so now, as we've been reflecting on Hedwig's beautiful writings and Bernard, and we'll come back to this again this afternoon, that we might open our hearts, that deep center of the inner kiss, to the beloved as the beloved opens to us.
Thank you.
what I'm really inviting us to now is to come back to this sense of what's been stirring in the inner depths of our heart this morning as we've pondered this way of oneing, of being within the oneing, of seeing from within oneing. And I have got this on a PowerPoint, which I may put up this afternoon, but I won't fiddle with this now because I want to really stay in this ground. We're going to meet in groups now, and we have groups of three, so you'll be put into those rooms. And what's really important in this process is, please, that we begin with 5 minutes silence. When the group comes together, you might choose who might be the timekeeper. So if we could just choose a timekeeper. So we gather and we enter the silence together for 5 minutes. And then from that ground of silence, person number one speaks or utters or gives voice to in some way what's been stirring in this inner kiss within you this morning. And as the person speaks, the other two people with that very open heart awareness listen from the ear of the heart to what the other's saying, so that we can feel, I feel you feeling me, so that we're in that intimacy of being with the other in that sense of what's happening. And we're not speaking, we're just listening with heart awareness, so that each person has a turn to speak for 5 minutes. After the first person has spoken, we have a minute's silence, then the second person speaks, a minute's silence, and the third person speaks, a minute's silence. And then just to finish, which I'll hopefully be able to lead you into, we'll just ask you in your group to choose a symbol that you might hold over lunch now that says something to about what is the beloved doing in you right now. All right. Yes. So from there, then you'll go straight into lunch, and we'll meet back at 2 o'clock.